Now the whole earth had one language and the same words. And as they migrated from the east, they came upon a plain in the land of Shinar and settled there. And they said to one another, come, let us make bricks and burn them thoroughly. And they had brick for stone and bitumen for mortar. Then they said, come, let us build ourselves a city and a tower with its top in the heavens, and let us make a name for ourselves. Otherwise, we shall be scattered abroad upon the face of the whole earth. The Lord came down to see the city and the tower which mortals had built. And the Lord said, look, they are one people, and they have all one language. And this is only the beginning of what they will do. Nothing that they propose to do now will be impossible for them. Come, let us go down and confuse their language there so that they will not understand one another's speech. So the Lord scattered them abroad from there over the face of all the earth, and they left off building the city. Therefore, it was called Babel, because there the Lord confused the language of all the earth. And from there, the Lord scattered them abroad over the face of all the earth. Holy wisdom, holy word. Thanks be to God.
Imagine you've been kidnapped. You, your family, your neighbors, your friends, all of you kidnapped, marched a long way across a broad desert, and forced to settle down in a strange land and be someone else's servants. Imagine feeling absolutely powerless to liberate yourself from the control of your captors. Your only means of opposing those who have turned your world upside down are the stories you tell each other. The people of Israel had been taken captive by the Empire of Babylon. The city of Babylon would have had high walls protecting it, would have had palaces for its princes, and it would have had giant pyramid-like towers, human-made mountains to honor its gods. So it's not surprising that the captive people of Israel might have told a story about a place called Babel, where the overwhelming power of the nation made them an enemy of God, the one true God, Israel's God. In today's reading, the people of Babel made a technological breakthrough. They didn't need to quarry stone and haul it a great distance to build their buildings. They could take mud, mix it with straw, and form it into bricks. Dry out the bricks, and then stack them together, gluing them to each other with the tar that was abundant in the oil-rich region of Iraq. High walls, palaces and temples could be rapidly built. And so the people build a tower so high that God takes notice. Maybe these humans will try to build a structure high enough to storm the heavens' heights. So God puts an end to their unity by making it nearly impossible for them to understand each other. They become divided, and their common efforts fall apart. They become a weaker, scattered, warring group of people, divided amongst themselves. This story was told by people who had watched how systems of domination functioned. It turns out that human communities are a bit like towers. The higher you build them, the more weight and pressure is placed on those at the base. Too much weight, and things fall apart. Or you could think of human communities like the game of Jenga. That's the game where you have a tower of blocks, and you play the game by taking a block out of the lower part of the tower and putting it on the top of the tower. Block by block, the tower grows higher. But eventually, the tower falls. That's the thing about Jenga. It's never a question of whether the tower will collapse, it's only a question of when. Systems of domination function to drain wealth and power from those at the bottom of the socioeconomic tower and funnel it to those at the top. Those on the top see their fortunes rise more and more. The more wealth and power they have, the easier it is for them to gain even more wealth and power. In their view, there is no limit to how much they can accumulate. They can storm heaven's heights with their desires. They start to think of themselves as superior to those below them, something more than mere mortals. The higher they go, the harder it is for those at the base. The people at the bottom of the tower start to feel crushed by the weight of trying to keep themselves and their families safe and healthy with ever diminishing resources. They begin to understand that they are not part of a great common effort. They start to see themselves as suffering victims of some organized plot. Sometimes they rightly blame the people on top. Sometimes they blame foreigners, unbelievers, or other people who are markedly different. As the weight increases on the unjust social order, it starts to come apart. People on top apply ever-increasing levels of violence to hold the structure together, while at the same time finding ways to divide those at the bottom against each other. We can see that in our world now. The system we have is doing what it's supposed to do. It exploits nature, exploits vulnerable people, exploits future generations, all so that some of us can live lives at a standard far above others. The system of domination that guides the perspective of most of the world is doing what it always does: consume anyone and anything it can until it finally collapses. Only this time, the collapse will be beyond anything we've ever known and beyond what we want to imagine. In the story of Babel, people were cursed with the inability to understand each other. In this country, we've become so divided that though we speak the same language, it's as if we are trying to communicate with people whose worldview seems incomprehensible. We are fracturing as a nation, as communities, as families, and we're fracturing within ourselves. We're becoming more anxious, fearful, and despondent as the once solid ground of tradition, community, and opportunity disappears. It was no different in Jesus's day. The Roman Empire was draining the resources of Israel, and the nation was fracturing in all sorts of ways, even down to the people fracturing within their own minds. What they called in those days demonic possession. The evils of their world penetrated their identities. Jesus's response to this fracturing was twofold. First, he challenged the ways of violence, the ways of that social order that were normalized in people's values and behaviors. Secondly, he called a community together who would do what he was doing, who would live out the radically different values of God's love and challenge the ways of the world. Today is Pentecost. Today we celebrate the moment when the frightened, fugitive followers of Jesus woke up to their identity and mission. The symbol of that is flames over their heads, sort of like lightning bulbs in the cartoons that we're used to seeing. It's a moment when they see clearly what's been around them all the time. Something inexplicable happened, and they were changed. They woke up to the reality of the presence of the power of God's love, and they were no longer afraid. They were no longer pawns of the powerful. They threw open their doors and they went out into the world and they started boldly speaking their truth. They started building a new world from the ground up. And with an eye to the story of Babel, One of the marks of this amazing alteration was that the people from distant lands and diverse cultures understood what these transformed disciples were talking about. As I mentioned before, there was a conversation about making changes in the Pacific Northwest Conference of the United Church of Christ at their last annual meeting. The goal seemed to focus on hiring a person of color in a leadership role in the conference. It is a laudable goal. It's also a safe goal. We have to ask ourselves whether 80 years from now, when the Earth's temperature has increased to the extent that hundreds of millions of climate refugees will abandon their homes for other lands, when starvation is rampant and nations collapse, does anyone really think that the people then will look back and thank us for our progressive hiring practices? We need another Pentecost. We need to wake up. We need to quit thinking of the church as a refuge and start thinking of it as a center for radical transformation. We need to stop projecting our ways of life into the future. It's not going to be there. The American dream never existed for most of the world, and it's dying for most Americans. We have to stop pretending that the next election or invention or divine intervention will painlessly fix everything. We need to abandon our desire to make the church what it used to be. It needs to be much, much more. We have to stop pretending that small, safe changes among ourselves is the limit of what we can do. For things to change, we must change. The church must change. Our goals must change. Our expectation about our lives must change. Our calling is to boldly and creatively challenge the guiding values of our violent world and offer a better direction for humanity. Some will understand and some won't. Our job is to speak our truth, believing that our actions will make a difference. We don't have to convince the haters to stop hating. We just need to give those who yearn for a better way a path towards the dream. But no one will hear us if all we do is wait for them to come to us. Fear, greed, and apathy bring division and despair. Love, compassion, and justice bring unity and hope. It is a simple yet profound message. Can people like us change the world? Well, Jesus apparently thought so. One thing is absolutely true. If people like us don't try, if we don't take action, if we don't speak out, if we don't risk being noticed, then nothing will change for the better. Pentecost is about the followers of Jesus awakening to their calling. It's time for Pentecost to come to the church again. Amen.